here comes AI, and it's flipped them back, all of us included, back on our feet and then our head, 365. I would say, polarizing opinion, which is really hard for most educators to understand. I talk to them all day, right? From presidents and governance boards and all kinds of things, is that AI is going to impact higher education in a extremely positive way. And it's faster, right? It's here, it's landed on the shores. And those that are embracing it, acting on it, using it, are able to provide a much better student experience. They're able to operate in a much more efficient way. And this is maybe, it's not even chapter one. I think we're in the prologue, right? You just opened the book, and that's kind of where we are today. So that's, I guess, where I'll kick us off. We're excited about it. We use it in the delivery of our core products. We use it in our business operations. We use it in how we communicate with the respective students. Our clients use it already in how they educate, mentor, deliver curriculum, instruct students. So that's kind of where I'll start us off, and you take us where you want to go, Mr. DeJarnette.
Well, Darren, I'd love for you to maybe respond to that, because you're really, in it, internationally, onshore, offshore. So I think every day, every week we talk to you, you've got some new insight, something that you've observed, added, all that stuff. So we love to hear from you.
Absolutely. So once again, thanks for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure to share and learn. I got my student hat on anytime I'm around Kumar or Naros. So thanks for having me. So Naros, you described it perfectly. AI exploded on the scene, right? And I think the number one sort of topic that happens when I'm addressing, whether it's audiences or executive leadership in higher education, is where does AI belong? Where does AI belong in your ecosystem, right? So that's the first piece, right? The second piece, and I hope we kind of get to approach this today, is fear of replacing educators with AI, right? Which will not happen. AI is here to make our lives better and easier, as opposed to replacing, an entire structure that's dedicated to student success. So, I would really like to kind of begin there. And Kumar, I know we discussed AI governance, and that's a really big piece of AI exploding on the scene, right? So how are you going to use it? What rules need to be put in place, right? What governance, right, can help you really understand how to execute problem-free? And I want to take a second to go back to a LinkedIn post I made probably a week or two ago, and it was about a student who wrote a paper using Grammarly. Right. And, Grammarly's got an AI component. Right. And so they screened this, this paper she wrote and decided that she plagiarized it. And she already let the school know that they use Grammarly. The school uses Grammarly for all types of things. And now she's on the verge of getting suspended from school. And so it's a really difficult story to learn about, because had this school sort of had some governance in place, we could avoid these type of things that sound so fearful and spread so quickly, right? And make, us all a little hesitant about embracing AI. So love to have that governance conversation, of course, and really where AI might fit in an education ecosystem.
Yeah, no, that's great stuff. I've seen that, and I think the enforcement of it is, a huge concern. It's something that, is being highlighted, and I don't know if people know how to play it, right? So was it plagiarism? Was it not? The rules haven't really come out yet, Naros. Like, I think everything is evolving, in real time. But that, yeah, I'd love to hear your take.
Yeah. So, all right, you got to start backwards. And this is what we help our clients understand specific to AI. Okay. Colleges and universities have a responsibility for outcomes. So you're responsible for positive student outcomes. You're responsible for outcomes in the community that you service. you know, if you're a big Power Five school, that could be impacting the city, the community, or the state that you're in. If you're a private research university, that's the greater world, right? So, whether it's, you know, solving an infectious disease or creating a cure for cancer, most of that stuff comes out of our colleges and universities, or just delivering on your promise to elevate the skill set of a graduate so that they can be gainfully employed. So if you think about it that way, you can reverse engineer the university or college's role in this world of AI. It's not enforcement or governance. That stems from fear, right? So that poor girl that's going to get kicked out of college or university because she utilized AI to get her paper done more quickly, efficiently, and at greater quality. Well, she's actually just using what the tool was developed for, right? So, okay, what does AI do? What does AI look like is what an educator has to think about. So we can use a lot of different examples of this, but essentially AI is meant to transform to an agent, right? An operator, a large language model that's, you know, drives data and decision making, or some kind of automation tool. That's going to impact every single sector in the world. So let's talk about this. Good. If I wanted to do test trials for a promising cancer treatment, prior to AI, that is millions and millions and millions of dollars of investment. That's years and years and years of testing. Okay. Universities and colleges have to educate scientists to do this work. So a university's role today is to make sure you understand, you know, human biology and you know, the ability to develop and test potential treatments and promising treatments. What you have to do as a college and university is rethink your role in that into the future. Using AI today, right? A test trial on a promising treatment can happen in hours or days, utilizing the appropriate large language model or AI. So now the university or college's role is no longer to educate a scientist. It's to educate a scientist how to operate a bunch of AI agents to be able to do a quality trial on a promising drug. If you don't think of it that way, you're going to get caught in these traps, right? And if you get caught in traps, here's what's going to happen, right? Universities and colleges are going to essentially pass other universities and colleges because they can achieve this outcome for their students, community, state, country, city, the world, whatever it may be, right? So it used to be create, build a massive brand, raise a ton of money so that you can solve problems like this. That's not the case anymore, right? It's embrace technology, AI, educate the future on how to make an impact using this technology. So that might be a polarizing opinion, right? But that institution that wants to suspend that aspiring student is essentially working opposite of the outcome they're supposed to achieve,
Exactly.
right? That's my opinion on it. And your job as a university leader is to rethink your operation so that you can achieve these outcomes, right? So I think a lot of people will talk about AI and colleges and all that kind of stuff in a very vanilla way. Like, oh, you can use it in your administrative support. You can read your admissions data better so you can make better decisions. You know, you can help teachers be better so they can educate better. You can support students better. And you can do research support. I don't think so. I think it's a completely different lens. It's how do you educate your student population on utilizing AI to achieve the greater outcome that you've set out to, right?
You absolutely stated that perfectly. And I'm going to jump in here and extend the use case you just shared. When that test group sort of starts to play with AI and understand AI and its implications, not necessarily just on the administrative staff, but students as well, there should be an ethics committee put in place right away. So they're observing the test group and they're better understanding what options they have. I think that's a big piece of this. It would fall right underneath the umbrella of ethics committee. The second thing is, I would integrate AI into education. on the tools that you have available, like a Grammarly. Lots of students might not necessarily know that Grammarly uses AI, right? So it's really integrating that into your campus life, your curriculum, and or your student activities. Part of having an ethics committee, as we all know, means we have to prioritize fairness and mitigation when it's appropriate, as in a case such as this. Had they established some ground rules earlier in the game, this most likely could have been avoided, right? Which is really, really why I'm really so big on having these ethics committees. I think another piece of AI, Naros, which I'm sure we'll talk about as it comes to this, is developing some sort of privacy or protection around AI. And then last but not least, having staff that understands AI tools, that actually use them, go to demos, evaluate these tools, right? Understand how they work. I think it's going to be up to administrative staff and higher learning to take it upon themselves to go out and learn about AI and the implications for students.
Yeah, a couple of great points, right? Okay, so governance, let's start there. AI is actually infinitely easier to keep compliant, private, and equitable than human beings. Because you just build the guardrails, right? You just build up the guardrails. So I'll leave that point in with embracing AI into your core to further kind of assist students and create proper expectations. We work with a client, amazing school, been around for a long time, right? 10, 15 years short of 100 years in operations, nimble university that essentially looked at AI as an opportunity and recognize the need for governance, guardrails, boundaries, equitable rollout. And they essentially, right, their biggest issue was student success in online or hybrid learning. And they narrowed it down to most of our online learners are learning outside the hours that teachers are in office, that our instructors are in office, right? So a traditional student in class, it can easily access office hours, 8 to 5 a.m., 9 to 4 p.m., whatever time zone they're in. What they identified was their online learners and their hybrid learners were mostly completing their work outside of those hours, 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And when they had the questions or needed the guidance, they couldn't be supported. Mentors weren't available. Instructors weren't available, okay? So they essentially embraced this technology, this large language model, and licensed through OpenAI, built a bot or an agent mentor that's available 24 hours to their students and taught it all of their curriculum, used their own curriculum, their own data, and taught this agent or mentor all the curriculum, then created boundaries and guidelines for it to not allow plagiarism, cheating, right? But essentially, all their students got a 24-hour co-pilot that was there when the student needed them to guide, provide further clarity, dive deeper into the context that they were learning, and exponentially started to see the outcomes of their online and hybrid students improve. Not expensive, right? Not scary, but they control not only the narrative, but to your point, right? Now they have a way to govern what students are doing. So instead of one of their students logging into ChatGPT and saying, what is the molecular value of such, right? They can go directly to the co-pilot provided by the institution to seek that information. The instructors are trained on it, faculty understand it, right? And it's part of their ecosystem. That is how you do it, right? Not essentially saying it's scary, I don't want to touch it, I'm not going to educate my instructors on it, and then I'm going to start kicking students out for using it, right? That's not progress, essentially, right? And progress, especially in our country, stems from our educators, right? Like, that's where it comes from. So, great point there.
Let me challenge the both of you with the counter case, right? As they say on Wall Street, what about moral hazard, right? What about academic integrity, right? What about, you know, those type of terms when you start to kind of go down this slippery slope? Plagiarism is extremely important when you come to writing and a person's work and their material. So I'm not sure what the equivalent of moral hazard would be in academics, but I think you get where I'm going with it, right?
Sure. So one of the things that was interesting about the young lady we were just discussing who got in a little bit of trouble with Grammarly is Grammarly has a generative AI and detection service, right? So it can sort of rate your assignment, if you will, in terms of what it's able to detect, right? In this particular case, this young lady's work was flagged as unintentional cheating, right? So that to me is an awesome opportunity to when a tool is introduced to a student to say, here's how it works. Here's how it will rate the work that you have completed. And if you inform and educate students up front, they will understand, to Naras's point, what is acceptable, right, within the guardrails created by the institution. And they will play in that sandbox. I do have a concern when it comes to AI, but mine is more along the use of ethical thoughts of ethical use of data and fairness and equity. There's a lot of bias, as you know, when it comes to AI. So if we just do an AI search, AI will pull the information that it can find, right? In most cases, that information was introduced by a human, right? Which means it will be inherently flawed, right? So it's really understanding how to filter the information that's relevant versus the information that is not. And again, I think governance is a really, really big or important part of that in order to make sure that not only administrative and faculty have success, but students are driving towards the outcomes that they're looking to achieve.
Yeah, and I think the university has to define that, to Darren's, point. I think a large language model does have a place and doesn't have a place inside the university. I believe the university and the college needs to own it, kind of like the example that I gave, and dictate its use. But to answer your question, universities and colleges are not protected from revolutions, right? If you look at degrees offered by universities and colleges prior to the Industrial Revolution, arts and humanities, philosophy, law, medicine, theology, right? Look at degrees offered today. Those still exist, right? But universities and colleges don't have a choice to not educate engineers, whether it's industrial engineers, mechanical engineers, or software engineers. So as a university and college, you have to figure out, what is your role in this modern day revolution? Because it is, right? So I'm sure there's still a philosophy degree at almost every liberal arts university or state school in America today. Okay. But I'm also sure that there's probably a computer sciences degree at every single one of those colleges at the same time. So do I expect someone, in a that's an English major to write all their work and summarize all their readings via AI? Probably not. There's a different application of it, right? But do I need to start educating my med students and my computer science students differently because of this revolution? Yeah, you don't have a choice, right? And then the quicker you adopt, the better your outcomes. The slower you adopt, the slower your outcomes, right? So it's like respect. You're calling moral hazard, right? You respect it, but it's also a revolution. So you have to react to it, right? I think the thing that went the weird thing today is that schools had decades to adopt to the Industrial Revolution. Okay. Schools have weeks to react to the AI revolution because of the technology. And that's probably what's really scary. And we have to give grace where grace is due. I think grace needs to be provided to the student, like the student in this example, right? And I believe that grace has to be provided to the universities because they're not designed to run this fast, but they don't have a choice. You don't have a choice, right? So when our clients talk to us, I'm not empathetic and slow and what do you think? My conversations are more like, how can you adopt quickly in the right way? And how can we support that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're actually receiving calls from schools that are looking to solve real problems, even at the admissions level. So, for example, we're currently working with a school in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they have a large global presence on their campus, and they are struggling with the ability to translate language. All right. So, obviously, our platform has that as a feature, right? Where you can immediately, very similar to Google translation, right? Where not only can you get that information, but you can get it in the language that you recognize and best excel in. So, to Naras's point, there's a lot of schools that don't understand some very basic things that can help them immediately just due to lack of information. And the more use cases that we start to see and start to understand, the better pictures look for those for student success. And whether we're talking about impacting graduation rates, student default rates, right? Because the goal is to get a student to graduate. And as we can use AI to push towards these outcomes, I don't think it makes sense for schools not to raise their hand immediately and start learning as much as they can about AI. And Naras, you said something really interesting when we first started. You said this is the very beginning. I mean, there are ways that are on their way to impact our lives forever. I mean, if you think about the deep learning part of AI, where AI will actually make decisions, right, on our behalf. And I mean, if there is an opportunity now, it's almost very similar to any other technology that we didn't understand the power of. Cell phones, the internet, whatever it is, right? We lag behind. And I see that with AI. I also see that it's so confusing when it gets put in place without the guardrails and scenarios that we're discussing. I can see it going south rather quickly, especially when we get to advanced AI and some of the new things that are coming about on market.
Yeah, and I would comfort everyone. iPhone came out, disrupted education.
Believe.
It, right? It just did it. Okay. Plagiarism went up. It's easier to sneak into a testing room, right? It has access to the open internet. And universities and colleges had to adapt. And you'll be okay. You'll adapt, right? It's not just AI, right? Schools will come around. It's just a really competitive space today in the United States and in other parts of the world. So most of these universities and colleges, because of the change that students have gone through and the sector has gone through, operate like competing businesses. So if you get to the starting line and you run before your competitors do, you're going to have a leg up, right? I mean, think about it. There's some cool things coming down the line. Think about degrees in neural networks, right? Think about courses about training large language models. Like this stuff is there's an optimism to it too, right? In the very near future, a graduate in one of these programs, okay, will create the very first synthetic working operating kidney. Why is that a big deal, right? Just in the last week, science finally got a kidney grown inside of a pig to work inside of a human. That just happened, right? It just occurred. It just happened. And the pace at which AI and its applications are going and what schools can do with it, the better the world. It's going to be way faster than anybody can imagine. Just hang on for the ride, right? There's a piece of it for every school, but man, the ones that fire off the gun and get off the starting line first are just going to be able to do so much more than the ones that hang on to see what happens.
The singularity is near.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. But fear, risk exists, right? Fear and risk exists. Is the value of education devalued? I don't know. If we don't adapt, yeah. Why do I need to take a Gallup accounting class when ChatGPT can do it all for me? That's a real question that needs a real answer. And for A student that's thinking twice about the value of education today, doesn't pose a bright future for colleges and universities that don't figure it out. The hottest degree in the last 2 decades has been computer engineering. I mean, it's pretty much fueled all of education. Okay. It'll go away. It'll go extinct here in the next decade. Right. Couple weeks ago, the first ever AI company put out the first ever developer agent that can actually develop code from scratch based off of a text ask, right? Or a requirement. So what's the value of paying $45,000 for a computer engineering degree, right? Those questions are scary and they do need to be answered. And that's, I think, the different, facets of governance and application and value and, how do you absorb it? How do you use it? There's a lot for us to figure out.
Absolutely. And on the back of that, Naros, just in terms of pending technology, OpenAI is getting ready to release what's called GPT-5, right?
Yeah.
That'll be here this summer. And if we think ChatGPT does some really cool things, when you're seeing GPT-5, you'll take a second look at, like, I mean, it's built on the previous capabilities of all the other models. And right now it's sort of really in a testing phase. So I think there's a lot to come to where a student that may have been afraid of pursuing a degree in nuclear fusion, right, may not be so scared to pursue that interest. Whereas before we may have had cognitive disconnects or, really struggled to understand complex topics, not so difficult anymore. And one of the things that our platform does is when a student enrolls in class and they go and buy a book, our platform says, immediately breaks that book down into chapters, Netflix style. And then it asks the student, how do you want to learn? Right? Do you want to learn me through micro bursts of powerful short YouTube clips? Are you an audio learner? Do you want the top five podcasts? Right? Do you learn through blogs quicker? Whatever it might be, lectures, whatever AI can find that's relevant to that specific topic. And now this information is, if we're using AI, it's globally collected now. It's just not, one pond that we're fishing out of. So the top, professor in Germany on, say, nuclear fusion, now every student has access to that particular professor's content. So really, really leveraging AI to help people get into degrees that may have seemed more scary. Think about all the shortages we have right now in the workforce. And there's this natural thought, oh, I'm not prepared for that, or I wouldn't be able to do that. With having these types of tools that can break things down in a way that you learn three times as faster, not only will you learn faster, it will resonate stronger because now we're creating customized learning journeys. So Naros, to your point, I don't know which direction it's going to go in. But really watching focus on STEM degrees growing and little girls starting to understand, oh, I could do it, right? We're just with a little AI co-pilot along the way. This will have a tremendous impact on our communities and in my opinion, the economy at scale.
Yeah, and that's a perfect way to put it because what happens in a revolution? Sunsets and sunrises, right? Old technology goes away. Old companies, old services, old education goes away. New technology, new businesses, new opportunities, right? Flourish, right? Countries grow, GDP grows. There's all these positive outcomes. But also, I love talking to faculty and instructors, and I learned this lesson a long time ago. Freshman music college class at Foothill Community College in Los Altos, California. Foothills of Palo Alto in the Bay Area, right? I was kind of a prick kid, and I asked my music professor, why do I have to take this class, right? And he says, it's not about the music. It's because my job is to help you see the world through a different lens, right? And I couldn't tell you anything about that class, what music we learned, what it focused on, but I learned how to look at the world with a different view through music. And that's what that professor taught. And it really stuck with me through, you know, my upbringing, my adulthood, my career in education. It's not the curriculum. It's not the book. It's not the degree. It's not the skill set. It's not the competency. It's how does that professor help you look at the world differently through the knowledge or the lens that you're being taught? And that has a lot more value than passing a test or writing your own paper, right? And if, to your point, if AI can act as a co-pilot to help bring students along faster or bring on different students that we maybe would not have been able to educate in certain degrees, and our instructors and our faculty and our professor can continue to guide and enlighten and show them how to look at things through a different lens in the context of what they're learning, then it's not what AI is about to do. It's what the education system embracing AI is about to do, right? Onto our future. So yeah, scary, sure. Will some people get left behind? 100%. Will some schools not make it? Yes, right? But will the positive outweigh all that? I believe so. I see it already, right? I see it already. And it's interesting because we have not done chapter one yet, right? Look, there will be, let me give you a glimpse into the future, chapter six, okay? There will be a university in the future ran by one human being with more than 10,000 students of AI co-pilots, AI instructors, AI faculty, and AI curriculum built by AI. That is coming. And is that good or bad? I don't know, but that's what the future looks like. And it will cost almost nothing to the student as compared to traditional education. And it's not for every student, but it is for some. And it may give a student that would have never had access to traditional education access to a real education, and that student may change the world. And that's a story in chapter 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 in the future. Is that good or bad? I don't know, but it's real and it's gonna happen, right? So I'm excited for it.
But at that point, you're one person away from the Westworld reality when the entire university is a bot, right?
Yeah, the floodgate opened. The damn blip.
Last question for you guys. I know you guys got to go. Do you foresee regulation, governance, all of that being done by the institutions, some type of committee, or do you think Congress will have to get involved?
That's a great question. I think Congress is involved already. In fact, Joe Biden, the current president, put together sort of a watchdog committee, if you will, that just sort of oversees the governance of AI. Really what they're doing is collecting data on all the things that's great about it, maybe some of the things that's not so great about it. And I think that's really important to mention because Sam Altman said that computing power will be the currency of the future. So to know that our government is already, right, looking at the options that it has to make sure that we're integrating AI in a way that's productive and positive and has great outcomes for everyone is super important. But to your point, I think there will be a greater or broader establishment that sort of looks at what governance should look like as a whole. But more importantly, I think each educational institution is independent and they have to decide for themselves, not only what type of AI belongs in their ecosystem, but what type of governance around each of these decisions is in the best interest of the institution as well as the student.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think if you look at the EU, they seem to be a lot more progressive in this stuff. They already passed the AI Act. Don't ask me what's in it, but it's essentially all-encompassing to govern AI applications in multiple sectors in Europe. I think it'll start at the federal government, work its way down, just like everything else does. Yeah.
All right. I can't think of a better place to end it than right there. And I gotta leave you guys. This is, of course, off podcast. The leave you guys your time to do your pitches. But the Ross, do you want to tell Darren what happened to us with our experience with the London guy?
Who's the London guy?
The guy that told us that he could tell that we're a pretty diverse organization.
Oh, yeah. He's talking about the racist stuff.
Just
We're
piggyback.
contract closing on Gordon University, and they had the dean of the business school, which is who you're signing with, and the chancellor of the university. It's two white people, two old white people. And the guy goes, "All right, just a couple of questions. I think we'll close, but just a couple of questions." And we're like, "Sure, what's up?" He's like, "Is it safe to concur that your team is fairly diverse, like how you two look?" Why did he get? What made him ask that? It's a racist old white
He was trying to say something about the makeup of our team,
guy. There, where
the Christian school.
we said. We said we have the all face, the list of Christians, some of us are not, some of us are black, some of us are, yes, then sign the contract, champ. I think
Wow.
you're supposed to say, what kind of an anomaly? Everybody's white and love Jesus.
Wow.
I was like, but I, yeah, it was amazing that, like, he just really said it. Like, he just.
So here's an interesting story for you two. Obviously, no, Ross, I don't know how much you know about Sibley Talk, but we were on, and we've had this question posed before. Okay, so what happens if you upload the Bible or you put the Bible on the Sibley Talk platform? Because it's going to break it down into chapters, right?
Right.
And it's going to regurgitate it right through.
I love them.
Yeah. So the gentleman that we were talking to was part of a religious-based learning institution. And that was a serious issue of governance, right? You got the King James Version,
Right.
you got the version 17, you know, whatever. And he,
National version. Hey, I'm with you.
yeah. And without getting political, this person was staunch, right? And you could tell. And it was just a really interesting conversation. Like, we're not, you know, hey, we need to set up these guardrails. We're not letting any other type of religious ideology near our lanes, right? It was interesting. But now I'm wondering, what happens if you put the Quran in it? Like, every day I wake up, like, what are we going to do next? Right? It's nuts where these conversations are taking us. And AI can turn all of it on.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. What was I going to tell you? I had a question. I'm trying to learn any question. Shall I be running today? What? Yeah. What's so how are you involved with that company, Derek?
I lead the marketing team. Yeah. So we're US based, but marketing and dev sit in Pakistan. So I'm back and forth. And I manage from here. So while you guys are, you know.
Are they contracting you? Are you an owner? Or are they paying you?
Yeah, all the above. Well, I started off contracting through poker, but then I got an offer and, you know, a deal package to come on board permanently. So
Yeah.
while you boys are nestled in your beds at about 9 p.m. every night, I'm on. It's 12-hour difference, so I'm typically on for about 3 hours, working with dev and marketing and what to market.
Being with the Packies, huh?
Hanging with the man, those are my brothers now, man. And you know, like you think you understand a culture or a religion until you get immersed in it. You know, I'm scrapping now. I hear something negative about Muslims. I'm going to, you know, bail me out. Bail me out. Man, it's just been an amazing, you know, opportunity. And
Let's go.
the impact that this has had on me, I hope it has, AI has on everybody, right? Maybe we can invent worlds for people to live in, right? Through Meta or whatever to better understand cultures. But yeah, it's been cool, man.
They have this dish called palau. You can eat that every day.
You love it or you hate it?
Oh, I love it. You should eat
Oh,
it every
man.
day. Like a stewed rice with some lamb and carrots. Oh, gee.
Oh wow, man. Wow. I got bubble guts quick. I ate some food called Golgapas, right? And the team, they got mad love. They're like, try this, try it, you know, and I'm like, okay. But it's like a, I don't know, man. Naras, I know you traveled to the Middle East. Kamar, have you been?
No.
Yeah, man. And let's think, just think about fear, right? I always thought, man, I'm going to do something, and they're calling my mom from a jail cell because I was in a Muslim country and didn't understand trash. Just like, man, I just feel so embarrassed thinking all these things existed when they didn't. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
It happens. What's the exact name of the company there?
Simply spelled Simplitaugh. Website looks like trash. It was created before I got here. I'm in the process of,
I'm
yeah,
just curious. So
yeah. So,
what are they raising their money? Is it theirs, or do they get a seed round?
it got bootstrapped. It does have a few investors, but we haven't gone into any official rounds as of yet. That's coming next. The CEO has exited twice. He's got some buddies at Sequoia and a couple other places that are sort of poised to support us. So when we get to that level, right? It's all about users, as you guys know, with these online platforms and apps. And yeah.
Yeah, how many users are in there right now?
What's that?
How many users are in there right now?
We are just under, I think, 30K right now.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you start organically, it's a long journey to get there, man. And so it can't move fast enough. But when you start,
How'd you come across these users?
that's a great question. So when I was at Delta, I had a the Ned Snyder hired a president of online. Okay. So I reported when I was in career services, I oversaw career services online. I reported to Ned's hire. Ned's hire's name was Mike something. I can't remember his name. He's a Mike Matwick was his name. Okay, so Matwick and I got cool over time. He kind of would like mentor me and show me stuff. We'd hang out late, and I would years pass, right? I go on to start one up with Jason, our student engagement app, and Mike and I both live in Phoenix, and one day he's like, dude, we should have lunch. I'm like, cool. So we have lunch, and then we start talking about our products. Well, Mike was the COO at SimplyTalk. So I said, hey, let's get our CEOs on the phone, see what type of synergy, we can cook up. And so from there, that's where I got the introduction.
Is he still there, or he's not there anymore?
No, Mike Matwick is no longer there. Yeah, he's not there, but I created forged a relationship with that CEO, and then they needed marketing help. And he's, tell me about poker. So that's kind of,
That's cool.
that's, yeah, absolutely, man. And it's,
How's poker doing? What are you doing with? Are you doing this full time? Are you playing with? What are you doing?
great question. So right now I'm leveraged in too many places, right? So as I know Kumar was this. I started off with the DEI app. Okay. So poker quietly runs the marketing for that DEI app. It takes these difficult conversations out of a physical classroom, out of a physical space, puts them on an app, right? You start talking about sexual identity, people just clam up and the conversations are shit. So I manage that marketing for that opportunity. Then I'm still managing marketing with 1UP, which got white labeled by an SIS company. So then I have a little bit more time on my hands. Poker is my primary source of income. Until you either exit these companies, go public, acquisition, whatever, happens. I'm in a really, really difficult spot now because I won my first VC contract with poker. And so not only will I support the VC, I'll support portfolio companies, particularly startups. So let me just show you this so you guys can just get a little bit quickly, see a little bit more of kind of where I operate. So I'm kind of in EDU, but I'm more just in tech, innovative tech, on the innovative tech side. But with poker, I ended up leveraging it so that basically it's a one-stop shop, right? So whatever companies need, they can just come here and get it. Then off to can you let me share a screen real quick, Kumar?
Yeah, you got it.
Cool. So as you guys know, I keep a deck. I'm ready to rock it at any given time. All right. So this is what we call a burrito slide, right? And Kamar, we want to talk to you about this, but this is everything poker does. Everything, right? Along the way, people ask us, we need help with IT, we need help with accounting, we need help startup, we need help with HR, people data, all that kind of stuff, right? So that's why I said blue, those aren't core products, but the rest of what you see are core products. So I do a lot for startups. A lot of paid ad campaigns and CRM selection, a lot of outbound B2B, and a lot of coaching and consulting. That's where I spend the most of my time. And now I'm pretty much industry agnostic, right? So yeah, that's just kind of a quick overview of all the shit that poker does.
Nice, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Is it all you at poker, or you got some help?
I got a team. I mean, I'm a founder, but yeah, I got a team. Some of them are, full time, and some of them, most of them I just contract with. Someone says, can you do this? I secretly can't. I call up Kamar and Naros and I say, can you guys do this? What would you do it for? They go back to the client and now that's the official product, right? Kind of like that.
Okay. It's good, man. You still excited,
Aaron? What's that?
Still working with Aaron?
That's a good question. I literally have a call set up with Aaron tomorrow to set up an outbound drip, so he could be the face of poker to investors. Aaron works for a Wall Street tech firm, and so yeah, so he's like the perfect dude to do that now. Aaron is not the Aaron we knew. No, now he's
Hey, we all grow, we all mature. That's
yeah,
nice.
yeah. It's cool seeing y'all, man, and watching your growth, man, and.
How's he doing?
Oh man, my brother's great, man. He's man, he just bought this flyer, this Volvo. I was like, who the fuck buys a Volvo? But it's really nice. Because he's a stiff corporate boy. He works for Discovery on Discover, the credit card company on the fraud side. Completely different. I'm like, also, let's get his revenue, buy this property. With my brother's kind of more like a 9-to-5 trap guy. You know what I mean? Like he's just
You guys just look alike. You're always different.
Yeah, way different. But he's good, man. Him and I have the coolest bachelor pad ever because we're both divorced losers now.
Oh, you live together?
Yeah, man, we got the bro. If you guys are out in Phoenix, stop by. But yeah, so I'm with him now. I initially bought it as an investment, but 3 months later, he's like, "Hey, man, I'm getting a divorce." Right, so yeah,
That's cool, man. That's
good now.
good, man. It's good,
And how
man.
old's your son?
No, the wrong soldier.
So
Three in July.
wow, congratulations on that. And Kamara, how old's your daughter now?
Last.
We told him to grow up, dude. Now,
Wow.
you guys remember, Naros, I think you remember the girl I married. My stepdaughter is 21 now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 21.
Yeah. You
Yeah.
still you still talk to her?
Man, no, because, on the way out, she didn't understand how to not hate dad and support mom at the same time, right? But I bought an electric car, and I'm at the pump charging. And it's at a grocery store, right? It's a fucking genius, right? Because now I do all my shopping at the grocery store. I walk out the grocery store, coming back to my car, see my ex-wife. I'm like, yeah, be fucking kidding me. We both look at each other. We're both wearing chains. She's in an electric Benz SUV. We don't say a word to each other. And it's weird. It's just weird, man. You spend all these years with someone, and then,
Wow.
it doesn't go the way you hope or whatever in the end. She filed, by the way. I'm not afraid to say that, though. I wish her the best. I don't. I got no hater blood. I've been tested. DNA is clean. I just want her to do well in life and, share out.
Yeah, I mean, a scorned woman is a scorned woman. That's can't do much about that.
Win some, lose some.
Yeah, let's go, man. That's
Yeah.
good. All right, well, thanks for being here. Good to see you, man. Late
Yeah.
afternoon.
Good to see both of you. And Kamara, I'll get some time on your calendar. And Naral, same for you, man. I don't know what other things you do in life, but I do a lot more than what you're looking at. So if you ever want to discuss synergy, I'm down.
For sure, man. Sounds good. All right, man.
All right.
Blessings, Jill.
All right. Good seeing you, Kamara. I appreciate you always keeping me in mind, man.
Always, man. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. You too. Thanks, man.
Oh.
Later.